This podcast is for investment professionals only. The value of investments and the income from them may go down as well as up, and investors may not get back the amounts originally invested. Past performance is not a guide to future performance. The information is not an offer, solicitation, or recommendation of any funds, services, or products, or to adopt any investment strategy.
Hi, just a quick note before we start the podcast. This podcast was recorded at 3 p.m. UK time on December 16th, 2020. Things may have changed by the time you listen. Now on with the show. Welcome to the Investor Download, the podcast about the themes driving markets and the economy now and in the future. I'm your host, David Brett, and on today's show, with Brexit looming and UK PLC suffering, we look at the damaging effect the uncertainty has had on the UK market.
You know, we've seen $42 billion or 17% kind of UK equity since Brexit, you know, 4.5 years, you know, fear of no deal.
Reasons to be more optimistic about UK PLC.
When we look at consensus at earnings forecast for the small cap, they're expected to grow by something like over 100% in the next 12 months, obviously, as we rebound from the effects of COVID, but then another 34% in 2022. So the outlook overall for and the prospects for UK small and mid caps is very positive.
And why 2021 could be the year for investing in the UK.
Seen something like 17% of outflows over the last 4 years since the referendum. And so we have the combination of all these factors is actually the direction of all of these factors is clearly turning more positive into 2021 and can be very supportive for UK equities.
Hello, how are you? I hope you're all safe and well. Investor confidence in the UK dropped away amid the pandemic. Having briefly re-engaged in late 2019 and early 2020, global fund managers retreated back to the sidelines, according to regular investor polls by Bank of America Merrill Lynch. As a result, UK shares are on track to lag other regions for yet another year. While the gap has recently closed a little following some positive vaccine news, the market is significantly trailing other regions year to date. However, investors observe plenty of stocks prices are failing to properly reflect company prospects to sustain and grow earnings over time. Against this backdrop, I wanted to speak to two Schroders stock pickers to explain how they're looking at the UK market heading into 2021 and beyond Brexit. With me today in the virtual studio is Nick Kissack and Bill Casey. Nick, how are you doing?
Good, David. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad at all. Where are we speaking to you from?
Speaking to you from Dulwich in London.
Oh, lovely. And Bill, how are you doing?
Very good, Dave. Very good. I'm in Twickenham, in my house. Very comfortable. The kids are out. It's very quiet, so perfect. Perfect timing.
Lovely stuff. Okay, so before we get to life outside the FTSE 100 and beyond Brexit for UK stock pickers, I just want to set the scene and chat about the Brexit effect on UK assets.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, you're listening to the Investor Download.
For all the talk of stocks rebounding in 2020 after a fierce COVID-related sell-off, the UK remains unloved. For instance, the FTSE is down 8% in the year to date compared to the US S&P 500, which is up around 9%, and China shares, which are up more than 20%. And Nick, my first question to you, why are UK stocks still seemingly so unloved compared to the rest of the world?
Yes, David, well, it's a great question. And what we've seen since is there's been an ongoing overhang for the UK market since the 2016 referendum, which has placed a particularly strong discount on the UK domestic stocks, but also on many of the international businesses within the FTSE, which trade at sizable discounts to their global peers. In fact, the UK trades at a record discount on most valuation metrics to European and US markets in particular. And from the valuation analysis that Bill and I have done, this tends to point to around a 25% valuation discount versus Europe.
Well, that's a heavy discount. Is there a specific reason for that, or is there just a multitude of reasons?
Well, Bill and I believe that it's primarily driven by the risk premium from being attached from Brexit and essentially global asset allocators waiting for some clearing of the current free trade agreement discussions before they can allocate back to the UK. Because as you alluded to, when you look at any of the various surveys, such as the Merrill Lynch Fund Manager Survey, the UK remains at record levels of underweight in terms of global asset allocations.
OK, so those Brexit talks are still going on, they're lingering. Bill, what effect is Brexit having on UK assets such as stocks, currencies and bonds?
Well, I think in terms of bonds, there's been very, very little. You know, there's a buyer of last resort in the central banks, and that's the same globally. In fact, they're targeting a yield almost, and hence there's been very, very impact in bonds. The equity market is a much truer picture of the world today. It's a reflection of risk and worry, and that is no more market than the UK to see that. You know, we've seen $42 billion or 17% kind of UK equity since Brexit. You know, 4.5 years. You know, fear of no deal. You know, and that's led to a lot of underperformance in the UK equity market. To Nick's point, you know, the currency has suffered over that period. It's probably suffering less so this year than in particular equities, but it really is equities that are really reflecting those worries and those flows in particular, and that's pressing down on the discount and the risk premium that Nick mentioned.
So the main sticking points around a deal being made appear to be around tariffs unfairly placed on each other's goods. But without a deal, we've already been warned in the papers that there could be shortages of goods in the supermarkets. And there's a real possibility that prices for goods in the UK will shoot up, and as there'll be no customs accord. Nick, how much of a threat is inflation and what effect might it have on the market?
Yeah, I mean, there's the risk, as you say, from a pure no deal scenario where sterling devalues, and obviously we see import inflation into the country. Now that is a risk and will remain a risk for the UK market until we get some sort of free trade agreement signed off in the next week or two. I think what we're seeing outside of the Brexit risk on inflation is actually several markers of inflation are currently suggesting a return to inflationary levels coming globally. You know, this has been supported by the sizable monetary and fiscal policy we've seen injected into global markets and economies this year. And obviously the bounce back from COVID, which is kind of coming into bottlenecks that we're seeing across global supply chains. And so what you're seeing is this kind of constrained supply meeting a return of demand. And you're seeing various inflation levels starting to pick up quite materially. I think in addition to this, we're obviously seeing various commodities such as copper break into kind of 5-year highs recently. And so these are the sorts of things that will support the return of inflation into next year. I think one of the things that we are keeping a close eye on is the fact that it's important to have inflation hedges in your portfolio. One of the areas that we believe provide good inflation protection is that of high quality businesses that have strong pricing power that can offset any of these inflationary headwinds to their earnings outlook. You know, high quality businesses with strong barriers to entry, whether they may be R&D spending, network effects, intellectual property, for example, these are what allow businesses to protect their earnings in times of inflation by passing through that pricing.
Okay, so there's plenty of risk out there and there's obviously ways of hedging against that. But Bill, in terms of a deal, can you just give us an idea of what looks good, what looks bad and what looks like an ugly outcome for UK investors in terms of a Brexit deal?
Sure, I think a good outcome, or the best we can hope for at the moment, is a trade deal with zero tariffs on goods and, you know, with a clear framework for dispute resolution. And, you know, this will give companies certainty, you know, UK companies certainty and international companies certainty in investing in the UK on a more long-term basis, long-term strategic decisions, which has been lacking for 4.5 years, this certainty. So that's really, really, that I think that'll be really positive in if we were to get a deal next year at the same time of this global recovery from the COVID lows. An ugly or a bad outcome, I think it will be an abrupt no deal, sort of reverting to WTO trade rules. I think the real downside here, and we all see the pictures or the picture of, you know, trucks queuing up at Dover and these places. But I think really it's the bad blood that might bring with relations with Europe and possibly the US under a Biden presidency. He's clearly lined out his stall as to what he wants to see. So I think it's really that'd be my risk, is the longer term political risk on a global, you know, US, Europe, China, Japan, and how they would view us in the short to medium term. Maybe in the long term, there's various benefits as we change the business model. So I think that, you know, and that could see sort of a capital flight out of the UK, and obviously the arbiter of that is the currency. And that would be an adjustment. So I think that's the ugly outcome. Where we sit here today, you know, this is a political decision, both sides. We like to believe that, you know, there is a trade deal to be done in the next weeks. And, you know, I think that should placate any worries on currency and hopefully open up the asset class again to being investable to the wider international community.
Yeah, time is running out. It's down to the negotiators now. December 31st is looming, but a deal, and the UK still offers a very attractive option for investors. So in the next part of the show, we're going to look at a world beyond the headline makers and ask where you can find quality in a UK market in an uncertain world.
Get in touch with us by email at schroederspodcasts@schroeders.com or visit our website schroeders.com/investor download.
Okay, so we'll get to the world beyond the FTSE 100 shortly, but I wanted to start by addressing some of the tropes often spouted about the FTSE 100. It's often said the UK market is doomed by the types of company on it, like by the likes of the big oil, mining and the high street retail companies which dominate it. Nick, you first of all, how true is that? Is it doomed by the companies that are actually on the index?
No, I don't think so, David, actually. Look, we can't ignore Brexit, but I think when you look actually at the makeup and the constitution of the FTSE, there's actually a big predominance of one very attractive smaller and medium-sized businesses within there. But there's also a good segment of it that's actually quality, very strong quality growth, international businesses. For example, you know, you can access businesses such as Unilever in the FTSE 100, which is obviously one of the leading FMCG businesses in the world, which trades at a material discount to its global peers, such as Nestle and Procter & Gamble. In addition, with regards to your point on the predominance of kind of the old legacy industries, such as oil and gas, I think what we've seen actually, interestingly, over the last couple of years, and particularly in the last 12 months, is that sectors such as the oil and gas sector have seen their weighting in the index halve over the last 12 months. And so actually, they're of much lower of importance than they've been historically.
We've done lots of stories at Schroeder's about the importance of dividend income, particularly for the FTSE 100. The returns on just the price index means that it's lower than where it was in 1999 as we speak today. But Bill, has the FTSE just become a vehicle for those that want to purchase stocks for income solely?
I think there's a lot of yield in the UK market. You know, there is a lot of yield. There's a lot of income investors that come to the UK to find that. I think that, you know, that some would say there's more value weight in the UK index and the commodity side and these things. But I think, you know, back to that Brexit discount, there is just cheap dividend streams, cheap cash flow streams, you know, quality growth businesses that trade, you know, the dividend yields are 1%, 1.5%, you know, 3% to 4% range. Good international growth businesses that, you know, the European and US counterparts have far lower yield. And it to me, it's a like-for-like discount. You know, they, when you think about the, you know, the normalized dividend yield in the UK is over 4% today. That's back in, using end of November, it's 44% premium to continental Europe, and it's well over twice that in the US. Now, I know there's more growth in the US, more tech in the US, but arguably, you know, that difference to Europe is really you know, I think unwarranted once we get past a Brexit worry world. So lots and lots of companies in this handsome yield 3 to 4 range, Nick mentioned Unilever, another one, Relex, you know, like for like peers, much lower on yields. For what reason? All we can point to is this UK discount, is this Brexit discount. It's the 42 billion of outflows since 2016 from the UK equity market. It's the lowest weight in global equity asset allocators that it's ever been. You know, it's not just the constituents. There's something else here, and we think a large part of it is Brexit and the worry around currency and dislocation and messy no deal, which we hope we can move past in the coming weeks.
Yes, as you're saying, Brexit can't be ignored at the moment, but there is a big part of the FTSE, as you were mentioning, that is dominated by smaller companies that don't get the headlines that the FTSE 100 does. We mentioned the rebound in the markets earlier and how the UK has missed out compared with its peers, but UK stocks appear cheap versus their global peers, in particular the smaller ones. So according to Schroders Research, global stocks are trading on a multiple of around 2x their forecast sales for the next 12 months. So that's the share price divided by forward sales forecast. And this is 45% more expensive than the average over the last 15 years. Compare that to UK mid-caps, which are cheaper, but even cheaper are UK small-caps, which trade at a 17% discount to their own historical average. So they look really cheap at the moment. But going forward, Nick, what are the prospects for UK small and mid-caps?
I think that the prospects are bright for the UK small and mid caps, because there's some very attractive, interesting businesses in those areas. But I think actually, obviously, particularly with a free trade agreement in hopefully in the coming weeks, the outlook would be particularly positive. You know, we'd have a cut with there'd be various issues that we've already touched upon that would benefit this segment of the market. For example, the certainty on investment and demand that a free trade agreement will bring, as well as the strength of sterling, which will be a benefit to the input costs of many of these businesses. So there'll be a kind of double whammy to the earnings outlook for these businesses, alongside, obviously, the UK fiscal spending programme that our Chancellor, Rishi Sunak, has outlined over the last 12 to 18 months, which, again, is supportive for these businesses that are obviously driven much more by the UK domestic economy. And to your point, David, you know, when we look at consensus earnings forecast for the small cap, they're expected to grow by something like over 100% in the next 12 months, obviously, as we rebound from the effects of COVID, but then another 34% in 2022. So the outlook overall and the prospects for UK small and mid-caps is very positive.
Bill, with Brexit on the horizon, does a no deal significantly impact those forecasts?
I mean, I think it does, but you know, think about smaller mid caps. They tend to be, you know, more cyclical. They do better in a risk-on environment when there's lots of liquidity, you know, and we've got lots of liquidity in the world and in the UK, courtesy of central banks. We've got, you know, a big regime shift in fiscal spending in the West. And we're coming from a very low base in the economy from 2020 for obvious reasons. So there could be a very strong recovery globally next year as we start to open up, as fiscal spending and liquidity does its job. And that's a good environment for small caps. Now, clearly, a good Brexit deal on top of that would be, you know, in my mind, would supercharge that for UK small caps that are already on a discount to the European counterparts. So clearly a messy Brexit deal could leave this discount hanging over small caps for some time. But arguably, you know, this discount is already reflected today, particularly versus Europe. So I think we get recovery anyway. If there isn't a Brexit deal, we just get an extra strong recovery. If we get a managed trade agreement, which would be very, very positive, I believe, for UK small caps, particularly domestic based.
So we saw big moves in markets once we had the vaccine news towards the beginning of November. And we also saw a big shift in the type of assets people were buying, the so-called defensive growth stocks like tech firms, was sold off and bought into more undervalued cyclical areas like the banks and the consumer focused stocks in the major stock markets anyway when the vaccines were announced. So that's also known as the Great Rotation. Nick, has that same rotation also occurred in the smaller mid-cap areas?
Yeah, it has. I mean, we've seen, obviously, as Bill says, we've had some, since the vaccine news, we've had the risk on coming through and the extra liquidity flowing into markets that tends to benefit the small and medium, mid-sized businesses and sees them outperform. So that's certainly helped. Whether it's actually that rotation has run its course is questionable because, you know, yes, there's been a very strong short-term move. But to your point around valuation, David, you know, these businesses are still trading at half-time sales. And so if we look on anything more than a one-year or 12-month type time horizon, UK small caps have still lagged materially, and therefore the prospects and the outlook and for the duration of how long this rotation can continue is still fairly bright.
Bill, you mentioned the big discount earlier. Are there areas of the market that look attractive, or is it just the whole of the UK market?
I think when you think about the rotation, there's been two rotations this year. There's earlier in the year, the market started to buy cyclicals because they were just so badly bombed out. This is across the globe. And then later in the year with the vaccine, they started to buy value stocks and cyclicals. Now, small caps have probably benefited to some guys from both of these rotations. I think it's particularly UK domestic mid and small caps, you know, with good, you know, so there's some very high quality, good growth companies that we happen to own in our fund that, you know, have mid to high single digit growth, high return businesses, very well managed, and like have a 3 or 4, even over a 4% dividend yield, which is sort of unheard of in the Western global equity markets right now. So I think particularly UK domestic mid and small caps have more catching up to do, but it's across the piece. You know, if there's a global recovery and global reflation next year, you know, that's bullish, particularly for on the cyclical side, cyclical sectors, like materials and industrials.
Okay, so that brings us perfectly onto the final part of the show. We're going to look at life beyond Brexit and into 2021 and where the market looks attractive for investors. Okay, so I just want to go to a Schroders survey of financial advisors, which found there's been a significant change in the number of advisors looking to allocate to UK equities. While 65% have decreased allocations over the last 12 months, 40% are now looking to increase those allocations over the next 12 months. I should say that the survey was conducted just prior to the US presidential election and the vaccine news. So, Nick, my first question to you, why 2021 for UK stocks?
Yeah, well, it's a good question, David. And I think there's a number or a combination of factors that are actually supportive to the outlook for UK equities in 2021. So, you know, we've had the rebound from COVID as economies have begun recovering and the vaccine news, which has helped support some sort of rotation towards value versus growth, which obviously the UK market still overall versus the US market, where there's it's driven by tech around 40% of the index. UK is obviously a more value oriented market, and so firstly that COVID recovery under the vaccines certainly helps. Secondly, what we're seeing in terms of return of inflation that we've touched upon, also driven by greater embrace by global governments of fiscal spending once again, which again is something that helps drive that rotation in towards value away from growth and is certainly favours the UK market. And then one of the other things is obviously the last and arguably the biggest is the current Brexit negotiations and the potential for a free trade agreement in the next week or two, which obviously would be, given what we know about valuation of the UK, the position in, and the flows, you know, we know that we've already touched upon the 25% discount that the UK market trades at versus its European counterparts. We know that the positioning of the UK market remains at record underweight levels by global asset allocators. And then there's the flow aspect, which Bill touched upon, which, you know, we've seen something like 17% of outflows over the last 4 years since the referendum. And so we have the combination of all these factors is actually the direction of all of these factors is clearly turning more positive into 2021 and can be very supportive for UK equities.
I suppose there'll be plenty of bombed out stocks in the wake of COVID-19 and Brexit. But Bill, how do investors avoid falling into the value trap buying stocks just because they're cheap?
Buying cheap stocks has clearly not worked for quite some time. I think a big reason is the world is changing. And the world's always changing, but the world is particularly quickly. You know, the disruption seems to be accelerating. For certain sectors, changing tastes seem to be changing, particularly driven maybe by social media. Even this year, the impact of lockdown and the behaviours that are going to potentially structurally change, like work from home. There's a huge amount of change. So, you know, just buying stocks for the reason that they're cheap, you really need to be aware of disruption and change. That's not to say there's not some very, very high quality value stocks that are not particularly expensive. You know, what we would look for is quality, is cash flow returns, companies that can organically fund their growth and or their dividend if there isn't a huge growth opportunity, with balance sheet headroom to give them options to consolidate their value chain, and are not being disrupted. And there's plenty of value names like that in the UK market, such as the life insurance space, such as the mining space, high returning businesses with some growth and a high yield. So 2020 was a year where certain value stocks performed very well. Those two parts of the market in particular, the miners and the life insurers, they've had a reasonably good year, as opposed to maybe more disrupted value ends of the market, such as banks and oil companies, and a stress year like 2020 that we've seen, you know, balance sheet strength, and the risk of change and disintermediation really comes into focus, and that's what's happened this year, and that's what. But this seems to be continuing to happen. So quality doesn't have to equal growth. You can have lots of very high quality value stocks, but you just really need to be aware of change. And often value stocks stay value stocks and stay cheap because they're being disrupted.
And you mentioned the disruption. That's one of the findings from the Schroders Financial Advisor survey. Said the majority of advisors said disruption will remain a major investment theme over the next 5 years. The survey also found almost three quarters of advisors reported they explicitly consider environmental, social and governance factors, so ESG, when selecting funds for clients. That's up from less than half in 2019. So we hear a lot about investors talking about quality companies. How does ESG and quality fit together?
Yeah, so I think one of the things that we believe is that the two go hand in hand, and actually a good quality company is a natural output, tends to have a very strong scoring or a very strong presence in terms of its the various elements of ESG. And that's something that we've found over the last few years, but actually increasingly so. You know, those businesses that generate high returns on capital, have strong barriers to entry, invest well in their businesses and allocate capital well, and those management teams that are conscious of doing the right things for those businesses and managing those businesses efficiently, they tend, as I say, they tend to have strong, naturally strong ESG scores. And that's understandable because, you know, if you're embracing optimizing the business in those other various aspects, it's natural that you also will embrace it within the governance aspect in terms of the composition of your board and the structure of your incentive plans, for example, and how you remunerate your key employees, as well as the more environmental and you know, for example, supply chains is something that we look at in detail and try to understand. And obviously within the clothing retailers, for example, in the UK, there's been certain question marks over the source of their supply chains and how they're run and whether there's been mistreatment of workers, for example. And this is something that we speak to in detail with our various portfolio companies. And as I say, it tends to be a natural output that a business that has a high quality bias tends to have a strong ESG presence.
Can I just add to that, David, just going back in my last question, you know, ESG and stakeholder capital is a huge trend in our society. It is tremendous change happening to the capitalist model, led by Europe and the UK. And, you know, to Nick's point, you know, back to that value trap point, if you're not aligned with ESG themes, you're going to be outregulated. You know, your investor base or your customer base can turn away from you. So ESG is incredibly important. You don't want to be invested in a company that's on the wrong side of those things.
Okay, so we know what a quality company looks like and how the ESG factor fits into that. So just my final question to you, Nick, which sectors look cheap and why, and which sectors have the majority of those quality companies sitting in it, or is it just spread across the whole index?
Yeah, I mean, there's various sectors I think particularly attractive now in terms of valuation, in terms of both valuation and the quality of the businesses within those industries. So, for example, healthcare has seen a very strong absolute and relative derating throughout the course of this year. And there are some very attractive businesses both in the UK and Europe within the healthcare space. Equally, certain segments of the staples, of the consumer staples and consumer discretionary segments are attractive. You know, some areas, more niche areas such as the UK house builders. You know, yes, there is a Brexit element there, but equally these are businesses with very strong, concentrated market structures, very oligopolistic in nature, where there's big structural long-term supply-demand imbalances. And these are businesses that generate, because of that, these are businesses that generate high returns on capital, trade at still very attractive valuations, have management teams that have been very proactive in returning capital to their investors and therefore have been very good stewards of capital for their shareholders.
And Bill, just to you, are there any particular areas of the market you're looking at?
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned, you know, our shade of value has been miners and life insurers. You know, it's all back to that next point on market structure. You know, it's a small handful of players that have, be it because of, you know, the barriers to entry rising over recent years, be it regulation or just scale benefits, you know, the big seem to be getting bigger and more powerful in those two spaces, UK life insurance and in the global mining space. I think there's some really interesting value in the healthcare space in the UK. And even some consumer stocks, particularly domestic UK on that side. And I think another theme will be interesting, maybe slightly down the lower end of the quality spectrum, but, you know, leisure companies clearly next year should have a good time, if this vaccine rollout works to plan and is on schedule. I think we're all, you know, I speak for myself, but I think we're all in agreement that we've probably spent a lot more money this year on things for the house and goods and products, and very, very little on experiences and leisure, because we haven't been allowed to. And I think there's a huge pent up demand there in the leisure space, where, you know, maybe some people will maybe take a longer holiday or another holiday, or certainly want to get out and experience things. I do certainly. So I think there'll be a higher share of pocket next year, post maybe April time, on the leisure space. It looks interesting.
Well, that was the show. We very much hope you enjoyed it. Given the current situation with Brexit, I'm sure we'll be hearing more from Bill and Nick in future episodes. But if you want to read more, please visit schroders.com/insights, where you can also find articles including the three C's driving work from home and their impact on global cities. Investors in the office sector face a divergent picture due to the working from home trend, says fund manager Tom Walker. And what next for healthcare investing after COVID vaccine success? With three COVID-19 vaccines proving effective, we asked fund manager John Bowler and Data Insights unit head Mark Ainsworth what comes next as regards to the pandemic and what the future holds for healthcare investing. Remember, you can contact us at schroderspodcast@schroders.com if you want to ask anything about anything in the show or suggest ideas for future shows. And remember to rate, review and subscribe to us at Apple Podcasts, Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. New shows are available every Thursday and most Mondays from 5 p.m. UK time. But above all, keep safe and go well. Cheers.